In today's episode of the Brains Bite Back podcast, we speak with Matteo Zimmermann, investment manager at Cemex Ventures, a company that invests in innovative construction startups aiming to foster the construction revolution. In this episode, you'll learn how Cemex Ventures first began, alongside how adopting new technologies and practices can help reduce carbon emissions in the construction industry. And finally, we talk about how innovation in the construction industry can help tackle the modern housing crisis that is faced by many young generations. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
So my name is Matteo Zimmermann. I'm an investment manager at Cemex Ventures, and I'm basically responsible for the corporate venture capital investments in startups in the construction technology space. So I kind of my background is actually before joining Cemex Ventures, I was a management consultant, worked for several years and there for 5 years to be more specific. And I started working in the industry practice, and I worked with construction clients at some point, got interested in the space, so tremendous opportunity to improve how things are done, and also kind of some interesting challenges, and joined then in 2017, joined Cemex Ventures. Basically, at the very beginning, we were setting up the open innovation arm of Cemex, which I'll explain in a second. But and we're doing a little bit of everything just to learn know exactly what we were doing, because obviously in open innovation, there's a lot of things that you can do. And little by little, I focused more and got more experience into the venture investing. And that's actually what I do right now. In terms of kind of explaining a little bit what Cemex Ventures is, so basically we're the corporate venture capital and open innovation of open innovation unit of Cemex, which is one of the largest building material manufacturers in the world. Exactly since 2017, so the same year that I joined, we have been developing relationships between entrepreneurs, investors, Cemex, and other corporations in order to revolutionize the construction industry as we know it today. That's the purpose. We do this in different ways. Like I said, kind of we do venture investing. We invest in startups that have good potential and that have also a strategic fit with Cemex. We also do a lot of other initiatives, like we have an acceleration program called Leap Lab, which we officially launched last year, and we're doing the second cohort this year. It's companies that we will accelerate together with Cemex to help them scale, to get them good feedback, to get them a pilot project, and help them scale. And we also have an incubation arm. We do some specific projects that we launch to the market. Another initiatives, a very big one, is actually the largest construction tech competition in the world. We do that together with other corporates in construction, so in the different value chain of construction, and we also have a very good initiative, which is naming every year the top 50 context startups, construction tech startups, and climate tech startups that we've met during the year. Which is also good kind of good for the startups also to help them get a little bit of name out there and some recognition, because obviously it's always a good push to help them.
Awesome, fantastic. Well, it sounds like you're working on some great stuff, and it's really nice to have you here today, Matteo. I know you mentioned that you joined the company in 2017, and a lot, it sounds like, has changed since then. But I'd really love to know, like, when and how did Cemex Ventures first start?
So, I mean, it started a little bit earlier. I mean, in 2016, probably, was the idea. And the idea was, other open innovation efforts from other corporates, it's how can we, I mean, there is a different purposes, right? But how can we help our industry, right? So we know that our industry, the construction industry, is lagging behind other industries. There is a famous or so-called productivity gap in our industry. That means that our industry has developed in terms of productivity slower than others. Actually, in the last centuries, the productivity has been stable in construction, whereas in other industries like automotive, for example, has been kind of a very good productivity increase. So that was the first reason. Second is Obviously, the pace of innovation is always changing, and it's becoming more and more, it's becoming faster, right? So we want to also be part of that. And obviously, for that, you there is that saying that says that, well, I mean, there is so many people within the company, right? And there's so many more people outside of the company. So probably innovation in terms of statistic will come from outside more than from the inside, right? So we wanted to partner with those top kind of smart and top minds and entrepreneurial spirits to partner with them to bring innovation, because actually you bring the best of both worlds, right? Kind of the corporate that has customers, has pilots, has resources, with startups that are actually struggling to kind of with a go-to-market strategy, getting some customers, pilots, and also come from feedback, right? So there's a very, also very know-how intensive industry where you need good advice from people from the industry to get there, right? So that was kind of the initial idea. Obviously, there's also a factor of how can we capture most of that innovation, also in terms of changing the culture of our business to be more innovation driven. And actually, it's interesting that now innovation is one of the values of CEMEX as part of our, let's say, our name, part of our logo is kind of includes innovation. Because it has to be something that you do every day, right? It's not something that just for us, CEMEX Ventures or R&D departments must do. It's something that everyone in the organization and the company has to push, right? Because it's difficult, but it's something that is worth it. So that was the idea. We set up CEMEX Ventures then in 2017. We set it up initially at the very beginning. We started pretty quickly with investing. After basically a few months of research, so trying to understand the industry, talking to different stakeholders, making connections, understanding what the mega trends are in construction, what are the pain points, where can we support, and after that, actually, we developed our what we call our focus areas, which basically is we've categorized them into four, which is basically the first one is green construction, so that's everything that is around decarbonizing our industry, but also kind of thinking about circularity and construction. It's about water consumption and conservation. It's energy use. It's sustainable materials, for example. The next one is supply chain. So how can we, when we're designing with specific materials, how can we improve and increase kind of the productivity from that point? To how materials are, how you estimate materials, how you procure the materials, how you get them delivered to the site when you're building, how to handle those materials on the site more efficiently. The third category is enhanced productivity, which is really kind of that addressing that productivity gap that I was mentioning. So really how to increase the communication, coordination, transparency between stakeholders in the design and execution phase of projects. Because basically in those two phases of design and execution, there's a lot of players involved. So there's a lot of friction between players, misalignment of interests, or just miscommunication in those processes. So how can we do that more efficiently? That was the whole topic. So there we look at things like project control and monitoring, to things like health and safety as topics. And the last one is what we call future of construction is now. That means actually everything or new methodologies of construction that radically change the way we build today. These are things like, for example, 3D printing in construction, it's industrialized or modular construction, it's robotics or advanced materials, right? So that's kind of how we said, kind of how we think about this, where we want to focus our efforts. And after that, we set up different things. Obviously, the acceleration program, as I mentioned before, to be also closer, to bring CEMEX closer to innovation as well, and also the startups to give them opportunities to pilot. And we decided to do that not at the very beginning. So we wanted first to change a little bit the culture of the business. bring innovation closer to the business. And when we decided that the company would be ready, then do the pilots and do the acceleration program. So we did that on purpose to start a little earlier. So we intentionally started a little bit outside of the business. And little by little, obviously, once there is that innovation culture and momentum, to try to bring and connect innovation with our business.
Fantastic. Well, I had no idea about that productivity lag that you mentioned. So that's completely new to me, and that really like has blown my mind. And that's also one of the reasons I love the startup space, because it is such a place for innovation and just pushing new ideas and tackling these kind of issues. So I think that's really awesome. And I want to know, before we get into the details, I think it would be useful to go over some of the basics. So with this in mind, what is ESG impact and how is it related to offsite construction?
So it's a good question. I mean, ESG in construction is a big topic, obviously, like in other industries as well. Especially, I think there is in construction, there's a big component in terms of environmental and social, especially. And I'll explain that in a second, but it relates actually very tightly with construction and how can we also with innovation, but kind of as an industry, help with the environment and social, right? So I'll just kind of to give you a few examples of where the problem is and why ESG is relevant for construction, and kind of in terms of estimations by 2050, sorry, an additional 2.4 billion people will be expected to be looking for a place to live. That's basically for the trend of rapid urbanization, for example, and the growth of population. So that number is the equivalent of a new Greater London population every 3 months for the next 35 years, right? So that's a big problem. On the other hand, we need to ensure that we live in clean, livable cities at the same time, right? So it's not just rapid growth at every cost, right? So and actually, according to the European Commission's, buildings are responsible for 40% of the European Union's energy consumption and 36% of greenhouse gas emissions, right? So it's also we need to think about the social component of we need houses and need affordable houses, but we also need to be kind of thinking about sustainability and how this will impact our climate, right? So and the other thing in terms of also environment, which is a very important topic in construction, is waste, right? Construction, demolition, and excavation waste generates 1/3 of world's overall waste, right? So that's a very big number, right? So I think that's part of why this is important and why we need to find solutions and innovation and technologies that will help us get there. One of the solution that you mentioned in terms of offsite construction is particularly interesting because it tackles both of these issues, right? So that's one of why we think this is part of our focus is offsite construction or modular construction, and that is actually a market that is predicted to grow from $76 billion in 2021. To 115 billion in 2028, right? And why is that? For different reasons in terms of, again, environmental and social, right? So for first reason is actually it eliminates waste. So just to give you rough numbers, but typically a small 25,000 square foot office produces about 100,000 pounds of waste, right? So actually with modular construction, you can reduce that waste by 98%. Right, and why? Because actually, you in a modular construction project, you precisely know the amount of material that you need from the design. You can order accordingly. All is kind of very detailed in the design, but also because you can reuse the waste material more efficiently. Kind of, and just wanted to get a step back maybe and explain what we mean by modular construction, right? But Basically, right now, the process, how it works in construction, is we build prototypes. Basically, you have for every site, you have a specific, you have an architect, a designer, planner, engineer that does a kind of a customized building for every location. Every project is completely new, right? And all the stakeholders that will be involved in that project are actually working together probably for the first time or a second time together, right? So there's a lot of things that can go wrong, right? If we think about buildings more like products or systems, where and you think about this more like a car, for example, so you actually have spend more time on the design and build it in a factory. So you some of these elements you build them in a factory, so outside of the site, and with much better planning, much better accuracy of machinery and so on. You can manufacture them on a factory and then deliver them to the site and assemble them, right? So that's what we mean by modular construction. So it's basically a building in factories, at least part of the components of a building, right? So, and in terms of benefits, there's also kind of big benefits in terms of operational energy efficiency of those buildings. If as I said, these buildings are products instead of buildings of prototypes. And you can think of it as a system. You're studying how the different modules, the systems, and elements work together as a whole, and that way you can improve the performance of buildings. So again, bringing that to the example of cars, if you were to do like a prototype car, kind of one-off car that is being manufactured with the same circumstances that I said before, new elements, new products, new, like for example, new parts every time, there will be a lot of issues, right? If you do it kind of a repeatable with kind of a more strategic relationships and commercial agreements with suppliers and stakeholders involved, you can have a better performance, right? So that's where we're looking at for, and when in terms of energy efficiency, plus you can also design better and do some improvements to the design, for example, in the heating systems and or even facades, doing some continuous improvement to improve how that product, that building as a product performs. On the other side, in terms of benefits in terms of environment, these modular designs are also designed for disassembly. So that's the common description, which is called the design for manufacture and assembly. So this is basically what describes you're designing, specifically thinking how you're going to manufacture it and how you're going to assemble it. But there is a kind of an increasing concept of design for manufacture, assembly and disassembly, right? Instead of demolition. So that will also increase or decrease at least the debris in construction and the waste generated. And in terms of kind of the social benefits of this, I mentioned it before, which the biggest is affordable homes, right? So for example, in the UK, which is a good example because there is a big gap of housing and the need for housing is very big. So actually, it's estimated to be 1 million homes needed in the UK. So that means, right now, kind of in the UK, I think like 160,000 homes are built per year. And we estimate that we need 300,000 instead, right? So there's a massive gap there that we need to cover, right? And that means we need fast homes, but also kind of sustainable homes, right? So modular construction is perfect for that, because actually the main benefit of modular construction is that you can build faster, because you're actually, instead of building sequentially, instead of building first preparing, kind of doing groundworks and then building, basically you're doing this at the same time, while you're doing the groundworks and earth movements, you're actually building in the factory, right? So that makes the construction shorter. And on the other kind of the also social benefit of offsite construction is that it provides a safer and more human-centric and friendly work environment for the workforce, right? And there's a massive problem in construction as well as in other sectors with skilled workforce, right? There is a massive shortage of skilled workforce, and that's why also kind of we need to provide an attractive environment for workers, right? And that will also allow us to attract kind of more a more diverse workforce, right? For example, there's a problem with attracting women in construction. So, and I think factory work could be more attractive for a lot of different people, which could attract and mitigate the problem that we have with the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, you have covered so much there, which has just blown my mind. And I have to say that I can completely understand what you're talking about with regards to this like deficit in housing. Like we spoke briefly before the podcast, I no longer live in the UK. But one of the things that I see when I'm looking in is definitely that so many people are suffering with this issue. Certainly the city that I'm from, Bristol, it's a very popular city. And that is something that I see all the time online about how hard it is to A, find a place, or B, even be somewhere without them raising the rent so much because there's so much competition. Yeah. And it really makes it insufferable. And I honestly don't think that I could ever move back to my home city because it's too fierce a competition. There's too many people wanting to live in a space where there's too little housing. So
there's a kind of a massive problem with, especially with young people. And the increase of kind of the costs, life costs, and it's a massive problem. So actually, young people can't afford to buy homes anymore, so they have to rent. But also, that's kind of that creates also kind of some uncertainty for the future, right? For example, where I come from, Spain, we're used to buying homes. Kind of, there is not kind of a culture of renting homes. It's normally it was a buying process, right? And kind of a lot of young people are kind of dependent on their parents, and can't afford to even kind of well renting. Yes, but kind of it's delaying actually when they leave home to kind of to pursue their own careers or their own lives, right? So, it's a massive problem, and kind of not. Kind of in the whole bucket of homes, but I know young people are suffering a lot as well.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that, and I've seen that the rates of young people staying at home for longer has gone up. And also, you know, it maybe wasn't so much of an issue when I left in 2016, I think it was. I left the UK then, but that's one of the reasons why I have kind of enjoyed life here in Medellin so much, is because it is a space for digital nomads and people can come here and you can avoid this in your home country. But I don't think it necessarily solves the problem. It just shifts the problem. Because one thing that I've noticed here is that a lot of people are saying that the rents have gone up here because all these foreigners are now coming in and taking up the homes. So it's like, it doesn't solve the issue on a global scale. It just moves it to another country. So definitely it seems like the only solution is more housing. There is no way around this that I see other than that.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I wanted to ask you so many questions, and you know what? You have covered so much already that I feel that I would just be forcing you to repeat yourself, because you have just done such a fantastic job of articulating everything that I was hoping to cover, really. And I really appreciate that, Matteo. You've, like I said, I know this is like the third time saying it, but blown my mind. Honestly, this is such an insightful conversation. And I know that you folks are working on so much. Like, what is next on the horizon for Cemex Ventures?
I mean, we a lot of different things, obviously, right? From the things that I mentioned, there's a lot of, if you go deeper into that, there's a lot of different topics that are interesting, right? I think the first one is obviously carbon or climate action is a big topic for us. It's not only for our company, for Cemex, but also for us as a kind of as a value, as a mission. We have to help there. There is a massive problem, as I said, kind of almost 30% of CO2 emissions come from construction and building operations. So we need to address that. So that's taking obviously a lot of our time and a lot of our thinking is that, right? So and that's probably also kind of the biggest mega trend that we're seeing, kind of especially kind of how it has increased in relevance in the last years, has been amazing. So And we see that other people coming to the industry, getting interested into that. Other investors are asking us and looking for solutions in that space. So probably sustainability and climate action is the biggest one. But there's a lot of other things that we do. So for example, we focus a lot on new construction materials that have a lower CO2 footprint. I'm focusing now on all still in reducing carbon emissions, right? Because it's a big topic, but there's different ways to tackle that, right? So, and there's kind of, that's how new technologies and other practices can help us. And for example, on those new construction materials, we have a portfolio company called ArcLight, which is actually introducing plastics, so plastic waste, into concrete. So basically that's a way of like landfilling, but kind of a sustainable landfill where you're actually burying that into the structure of buildings or into the concrete and to different elements of concrete. In terms of decarbonization, there's a famous kind of technologies called carbon capture, utilization, and storage. That actually means that a lot of efforts in our industry are to decrease CO2, but there is so much you can do. And at some point, it's not just changing materials and so on, but it's actually how can you capture that the CO2 that is emitted, how can you process that, or how can you store it, but also how can you utilize that, right? So there's a few examples there. We have a company, we are working with a company called Carbon Clean, which is actually a carbon capture technology based on an amine system. So it basically reacts with the CO2 and captures the CO2 to use it in later. In terms of the usage, there's a company that we have invested in called Carbon Upcycling, which is basically activating waste and variable feedstock with CO2 in a reactor. So basically those feedstock would be kind of waste from other industries like slag, fly ash, or even construction demolition waste. And it's converted into what we call a supplementary cementitious material. That means that it's actually a material that can replace cement as a emitter of CO2, right? So you're basically lowering the content of cement in the concrete, so you can build with a lower CO2 footprint. In terms of other things, we're also looking at alternative fuels. So how to create create a clean energy, like for example hydrogen as a clean energy source. And we invested in a company called HiiROC, working on them on some projects, for example, in the UK and in the US as well. Circularity, as I mentioned before, is also a big topic for us. So there's different solutions from Internet of Things and sensors, management platforms, and also kind of new technologies to identify, select, and process waste. Two examples there. There's a company called Soil Connect, which is basically using the excavation waste from one site to use that sand, that aggregate, as an input for other things. So instead of actually treating it as a waste, it's actually treated as an input for someone else, right? So it actually shortens the way the time of waste disposal, and it's much more efficient. In terms of also using waste for other things, we're looking at technologies to transform waste into energy, right? So for example, there's a company called Waste to Energy, which is an end-to-end solution to transform solid waste. Like for example, waste from the city, so it's municipal waste, convert that into clean and a versatile synthesis gas, which is basically a kind of way that can provide energy, right? It's through a gasification process. Then kind of more things that are a little bit more connected to software. We're looking at what we call sustainable product databases. So if you look at it from the emissions that I mentioned before, actually 20% of emissions, CO2 emissions, come from bad decisions in the design phase. Probably a lot of them because you're not able to take the right decisions because you don't have enough data to make those right decisions, right? So these platforms basically help you to select and specify sustainable materials. So that means having the right information at the right time to compare materials and decide which are the ones that have a lower CO2 impact, for example. And that is, it's difficult, right? Because you have so many variables when deciding on that. Kind of, you have to look at aesthetics, at how easy is it to install, the costs, water usage, CO2 footprint, kind of health information, and so on, right? So it's difficult. If you don't have enough information, it's difficult to make the right choice. And actually, very connected to that, there is another very interesting technology that is basically life cycle assessment technologies. So it's at the design stage. Once you have those materials selected, how can you compare them? And for example, if you choose one facade or another facade, which one could be better in terms of sustainability, but much more expensive, the other is cheaper, but less is not that good in terms of sustainability, but you can compare all that also with costs, right? So you can actually take the best decisions with costs and payback period information. So you can basically say, if you choose the one facade that is more expensive, but actually it will return in 2 years, right? Because you will have lower operational costs in operating the building. So you can have actually do that decision based on real facts instead of just intuition, right? So it helps, and not just looking at the in our industry, we make a difference between embodied carbon, which is basically the carbon that is emitted during the construction of the building, and the operational carbon, which is the carbon that is emitted during the lifetime of the building, right? So it can, energy is especially, or kind of insulation and so on. So basically, normally decisions are based on embodied carbon, so how much carbon is emitted during the construction, because you can measure that. But you need also to see, okay, what will be the impact of those decisions on the life cycle of the building, right? So you need to have all that information to make the best decision possible, right? And that's interesting. And just to finalize on things that we're also working on, it's we have a collaboration with a 3D printing construction company called Cobot, which manufactures the most advanced robotics in construction for printing. So, and you can print out actually all the walls of a building with concrete and kind of through a robot. So that's through a gantry system. So actually, it's like a three-dimension a robot that will move in three axes to build a whole kind of like a whole single-family home.
That's amazing. I've seen those videos before, and that's really incredible. I have to say, Matteo, this has been such an inspiring conversation. It's great to know that there are solutions for so many of the big issues we face as a society globally. And I just want to thank you once again for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Samuel. Thank you very much for the invitation and for having us and share a little bit of what we do and kind of the challenges that our industry is facing, but also how we can solve that with innovation.
Growing a company has many hurdles, from securing funding to expanding your business capabilities to ranking better on search. Each business challenge is uniquely complex. The solution to these challenges is growth-focused digital PR and marketing, and that is where our sponsor, Publicize, comes in. Publicize sets itself apart from traditional PR companies. It does not charge large retainers or churns out press releases, whether you've got a newsworthy announcement or not. Publicize builds businesses' online presence and gets high-quality PR and media coverage for startups and entrepreneurs who are priced out of a broken PR industry. What's more, listeners of Brainspike Back can find the tools and resources they need to overcome common hurdles that many startups face when trying to generate long-term growth by visiting publicize.co/BBB. That's publicize.co/BBB. That is it for today's episode. Thank you for joining us. I hope you've learned something, and if you have benefited from today's episode, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast, as these reviews really help us grow the show. You can also follow us wherever you get your podcasts, including YouTube. Just search BrainSpike Back and you will find us. We hope you join us for more episodes in the future, and until then, take care. Disclosure: this episode contained a client of an Aspasio portfolio company.